Good morning. Good morning. Who doesn't love a good budget presentation at 8 a.m. in the morning? Vice Chair McClure, the Appropriations Committee will come to order. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak.
Present.
Vice Chair McClure.
I'm here.
Committee Whip Mooney.
Here.
Ranking Member Driscoll. Representatives Altman.
Here.
Andrade.
Here.
Bell.
Here.
Benjamin excused. Brannon excused. Grisada Cabrera. Cheney.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Fine.
Here.
Garrison.
Here.
Gottlieb excused. Grant.
Here.
Gregory.
Here.
Hunchowski.
Here.
Masullo.
Here.
Payne.
Here.
Perez.
Here.
Rommel excused. Salzman. Schoaf. Silvers excused. Skidmore.
Here.
Stevenson.
Here.
Tomko. Williams.
Here.
You have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. A quorum being present. Members and people in the audience, please make sure your cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Today, we will hear a presentation on the governor's recommended budget for fiscal year 2024-2025 by Chris Spencer, the director of the governor's office of policy and budget. Mr. Spencer, you are recognized.
Good morning, Chair Leak and members of the Appropriations Committee. It is my privilege to present the Focus on Florida's Future budget by Governor Ron DeSantis for fiscal year 2024-2025. The Focus on Florida's Future budget sets a bold vision for Florida and prioritizes taxpayer resources in strategic priorities that I'll outline in this presentation. And joining me today are the professional experts of the Office of Policy and Budget, as well as the heads of our executive agencies. The Focus on Florida's Future budget totals $114.4 billion, which is $4.6 billion or 3.9% below the current year budget. Per capita, the Focus on Florida's Future budget is $4,938.20, which is $273.88 or 5.3% lower than the current year budget. General revenue appropriations of the governor's Focus on Florida's Future budget total $46 billion, which is $1.6 billion below total current year general revenue appropriations, reflecting a 3.3% decrease. Per capita, general revenue appropriations in the Focus on Florida's Future budget are $1,986.20, which is $97.18 lower than the current year budget, reflecting a 4.7% decrease. Health and Human Services continues to be the largest portion of the overall budget with $46.3 billion, or 40.5% of the total budget, and $15.9 billion of this is general revenue. Education spending is the second largest funded area in the budget, making up $30.7 billion, or 26.8% of the total state budget. The general revenue portion of education totals $21.5 billion, providing the education system with the largest portion of general revenue funds appropriated at 46.7%. Transportation and economic development is the third largest portion of the budget, with $19.7 billion or 17.2% of the total budget. Governor DeSantis prioritized the streamlining of the state's government workforce while ensuring that state agencies had resources in the areas that best serve Floridians. The Focus on Florida's Future budget establishes 750 new requested positions in strategically important programs, but offsets that with the elimination of over 1,700 chronically vacant positions. This strategy resulted in a total of 112,813 positions, which is a net decrease of 1,024 positions over the current year. No positions eliminated in the Focus on Florida's Future budget are currently filled, and the elimination of these vacant positions will not have a detrimental impact on agency operations or services. The Focus on Florida's Future budget retains salary and benefits for some of the eliminated positions in agencies experiencing significant recruitment and retention challenges, providing those agencies with necessary resources to recruit and retain quality staff. The governor's Focus on Florida's Future budget maintains healthy reserves. Governor DeSantis leaves $16.3 billion in total reserves, which is 14.2% of the total budget. This includes $6.4 billion in unallocated general revenue. Excluding unanticipated general revenue collections throughout the year in excess of revenue forecasts, this is the highest recommended level of reserves as a percentage of the total budget since the start of Governor DeSantis' administration in 2019. The governor recommends a $611.1 million transfer into the Budget Stabilization Fund, bringing the total balance to $4.8 billion, an increase of $3.3 billion from the starting balance of $1.5 billion when Governor DeSantis took office. Additionally, the governor again recommends a transfer of $1 billion into the Emergency Preparedness and Response Fund to accommodate any emergency needs of the state. These funds are critically important, as we've seen with Hurricanes Ian, Nicole, Adelia over the last 2 years. The unobligated balance of the Florida Optional Reinsurance Assistance, or FORA, contingency of $1 billion and the remaining $1.2 billion of the Florida Reinsurance to Assist Policyholders, or RAP, program remain in general revenue as reserves. The governor's focus on Florida's future budget continues to accelerate Florida's debt reduction strategy. Through the debt reduction program, Florida is paying down debt faster than through normal amortization. Last year, Governor DeSantis proposed a round of bond defeasance, and with the legislature's support, this defeasance program was able to eliminate $400 million of taxable outstanding bonds prior to maturity, saving Florida taxpayers nearly $34 million in total avoided interest costs. This year, Governor DeSantis' focus on Florida's future budget recommends another $455 million to the debt reduction program. This round will be used to redeem, defease, purchase, or otherwise extinguish outstanding bonds to realize debt service savings and reduce the amount of state debt outstanding. The broader authority in this round will allow the state to buy back outstanding state bonds on the secondary market below their face value if market conditions are favorable. At a time when reckless fiscal mismanagement in Washington continues to sink our nation deeper into debt, Florida has set itself apart as a fiscally responsible model by accelerating the reduction of our state's debt. The general revenue outlook for the governor's focus on Florida's future budget is both structurally balanced and fiscally prudent. The beginning cash balance of $9.8 billion is adjusted for the $1.2 billion in revenue adjustments, which is made up of $900 million in revenues received in excess of the August estimates and $300 million of projected Seminole Tribe Compact revenue, and more than $2.6 billion in current year expenditure adjustments, the largest portions being $630 million for the continuation of the Moving Florida Forward initiative and the $427 million appropriated in November special session. Then, available general revenue totals $56.5 billion for fiscal year 2024-2025. The governor's proposed $1.1 billion tax package totals $876.5 million in general revenue and transfers to programs like the debt reduction program, state employee health insurance, and the FVFP reserve total $1.4 billion. And another $1.6 billion is deducted for transfers to the Budget Stabilization Fund and the Emergency Preparedness and Response Fund. The proposed general revenue expenditures for the governor's focus on Florida's future budget totals $46.2 billion, leaving the ending general revenue balance on June 30, 2025, at $6.4 billion, of which $2.8 billion is recurring general revenue left unspent. There are no anticipated FEMA reimbursements factored into the governor's focus on Florida's future budget revenue outlook for a second year in a row, simply because we do not need to bolster our already impressive reserves and revenue outlook with promised future federal reimbursements. However, a conservative estimate of the amount owed to the state from prior storms, pandemic expenditures, and the 2020-2023 hurricane season is over $4.6 billion. As those funds are received from the federal government, they are added to the state's financial position as non-recurring unallocated general revenue. Reckless spending in Washington has driven inflation to levels not seen in decades, and over the last year, Florida families have felt those inflationary pressures hard. To continue combating these inflationary pressures, the governor's focus on Florida's future budget proposes to cut taxes by $1.1 billion. This is in addition to the historic $2 billion in tax cuts Governor DeSantis recommended last year. This year's tax cut package includes a permanent adjustment to the sales tax collection allowance to save Florida's small businesses $165 million, a permanent tax cut on over-the-counter pet medications for $37.1 million, a permanent exemption on the insurance premium tax paid for flood insurance policies to save homeowners $22 million, and a permanent tax credit for businesses that hire individuals with unique abilities for $5 million. The focus on Florida's future budget also includes temporary tax savings to Floridians totaling $884 million. This includes relief to Florida homeowners with properties valued at $750,000 or less, providing over $409 million in relief to fight against recent increases in property insurance costs. And this includes a one-year exemption of the insurance premium tax, totaling $250.8 million, a one-year exemption on the FICA assessment for $143 million, a one-year exemption for the state fire marshal assessment on insurance policies for $15.4 million, and the governor's tax cut proposal also continues the sales tax holidays that have been in the budget over the last several years, with $474.7 million to alleviate the inflationary pressures on Florida's families from the uncontrolled spending of the federal government. This includes two 14-day back-to-school sales tax holidays to save Florida families over $168 million, a three-month summer freedom sales tax holiday for $241.4 million, two 14-day disaster preparedness sales tax holidays to save Florida families $48.5 million, and a seven-day skilled worker tool sales tax holiday for $16.2 million. Under Governor DeSantis' leadership, Florida ranks number one overall in education and number one in education freedom for the second year in a row. The focus on Florida's future budget continues to prioritize our students, providing an historic investment in our K-12 education system of $27.8 billion. Governor DeSantis has consistently recommended year-over-year growth in K-12 public education funding since day one of his administration. And thanks to the support of the legislature, Florida has consistently achieved historic education funding every year. Florida's higher education system has been ranked number one in the nation for 8 years. This chart shows the governor's commitment to the Florida college system, which is a record $1.7 billion in operating funding. These investments in Florida's college system are vital to achieving the governor's directive to become number one in workforce education in the country by 2030. Governor DeSantis continues his commitment to a productive state university system that produces meaningful degrees for Florida students to be productive in our economy. The focus on Florida's future budget provides $3.7 billion in operating funding for the state university system. This is a year-over-year decrease because the budget recommendations do not restore many non-recurring appropriations in the GAA. Governor DeSantis' focus on Florida's future budget continues to build upon our education successes by providing high-quality educational opportunities for all students, supporting the teaching profession, and ensuring Florida schools and families have the tools they need for a safe and effective learning environment. Within the historic $27.8 billion in the public K-12 education budget and the focus on Florida's future budget, the following are major highlights for the year. The FEFP includes an increase of $610.8 million in state funding and $381 million in local funding. The highest per student investment of $8,842, which is an increase of $175 per student over the current year, an additional $200 million for a total of $1.25 billion to raise pay for teachers. Since the start of the governor's teacher pay raise initiative several years ago, these funds have supported an approximate 20% increase in the average starting pay for teachers in the state. The governor's focus on Florida's future budget also includes increases in other key areas of the FEFP, including an increase of $107 in the base student allocation that provides school districts with additional flexible funding of $625.3 million. An increase of $20 million for a total of $180 million to ensure our students' mental health needs are being met, and an increase of $40 million for a total of $290 million for safe school initiatives. In addition to historic FEFP funding, the governor's focus on Florida's future budget makes additional key investments throughout the public K-12 system, including $551.5 million in school safety initiatives, which includes $40 million increase for the Safe Schools allocation to $290 million, as I just said, $20 million increase in the mental health allocation to $180 million, and $52.8 million is provided for civic education. $10 million is provided for computer science professional development and bonuses. $10 million is provided for Governor DeSantis's Heroes in the Classroom initiative, which provides bonuses of $4,000 to 2,000 military veterans and first responders who commit to join the profession, and an additional $1,000 bonus for 1,000 of those heroes who teach in high-demand areas. $3.5 million is provided for the dual enrollment teacher scholarships, which allows certified public school teachers to pursue their master's degree and become qualified to offer college-level dual enrollment courses on their high school campuses. $9 million is provided for the teacher apprenticeship program and mentor bonuses, and that's split between $5 million for the teacher registered apprenticeship program and $4 million for bonuses to our veteran teachers that mentor new apprentice teachers, and $5 million is provided in operational support for Jewish day school security. The focus on Florida's future budget maintains $20 million for the Pathways to Career Opportunities Grant, and the focus on Florida's future budget also includes an increase of $100 million for the Workforce Development Capitalization Incentive Grant, which brings that to a total of $200 million to support secondary and post-secondary career and technical education. Additional performance-based funding in the Focus on Florida's Future budget includes $30 million for the Student Success Incentive Funds in the Florida College System, $8.5 million and $20 million in funding for district and college workforce programs to be allocated based on students earning industry certifications in high-demand areas, $645 million in funding for the state university system, and $150 million for the recruitment and retention of highly qualified faculty at our state universities and colleges. Of that total, $100 million is included for the second year of the state university system, and $50 million is included for the first time for the Florida college system. The governor's focus on Florida's future budget provides more than $977 million in capital funding for K-12 and higher education institutions. That capital funding is broken out as follows, and I'll run through this whole table. $42 million in school safety grants for K-12 schools, $220 million to fully fund public charter school maintenance without requiring school districts to contribute to that maintenance, $138 million for maintenance at state colleges, $138 million for maintenance at state universities, $11 million for lab school maintenance, $12 million for the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind maintenance, $6 million for public broadcasting projects, $627,000 for Division of Blind Services maintenance, $215 million for remodeling and renovation needs at higher education institutions, $180 million for special facility construction projects in Hendry, Wakulla, Gilchrist, Gadsden, Glades, and Putnam counties, $10 million for a new initiative to promote facility hardening at Florida's historically black colleges and universities, and $5 million for Jewish day school hardening, bringing the total for Jewish day school security to $10 million between operational support and hardening, which is double what was in the current General Appropriations Act. Governor DeSantis signed Executive Order 2306 earlier this year, setting a new pledge for $3.5 billion over his second 4 years in his second four-year term in office for Everglades restoration and improvements of water quality and supply. The focus on Florida's future budget will bring the two-year total investment so far to $2.9 billion already towards that historic goal. The key components towards reaching this goal in the focus on Florida's future budget include $745 million for Everglades restoration, including the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan, or SERP, the C-43 Reservoir, the EAA Reservoir, and the Lake Okeechobee Watershed Restoration Project. $330 million is provided for targeted water quality improvements, including grants to convert septic systems and upgrades to rural and urban stormwater systems, from which $100 million is specifically provided to the Indian River Lagoon, and $25 million is provided for the Coosahatchee River and estuary. $80 million is provided to continue the grant program to help communities plan for and implement conservation, reuse, and alternative water supply projects. $50 million is provided for springs restoration. $10 million is provided for innovative technologies to combat harmful algal blooms. $11 million is provided to continued water quality monitoring and the Blue-Green Algae Task Force. And $30 million is provided to combat harmful algal blooms and red tide. The governor is also recommending $158 million in Resilient Florida funding. This includes $11.3 million for the Coral Reef Restoration and Recovery Initiative, with an ambitious goal to recover 25% of Florida's coral reef structure and function by 2050. In order to protect and invest in our most critical environmental resources, the Focus on Florida's Future budget also provides $125 million for Florida Forever for land acquisition, with a focus on protecting our water resources, $50 million for maintenance and resource management for our state parks, $50 million for our beaches to address Florida's critically eroded shorelines, $211 million to focus on cleanup of contaminated sites to promote the redevelopment of those areas once the cleanup has been completed, $20 million for citrus protection research and awareness marketing efforts, and $1.3 million for oyster habitat management to help prevent further declines in oyster populations. The governor's Focus on Florida's Future budget provides $363.6 million for provider rate increases in HHS to encourage greater access to services and address challenges in the healthcare workforce. Recommended rate increases include $116.8 million for obstetrics and pediatric care to improve access to care for pregnant women and support care for seriously ill children and babies. The Focus on Florida's Future budget also provides $103.5 million for child welfare initiatives, including a 6.5% cost of living increase for foster parents and an expansion of adoption incentives to healthcare providers and tax collector employees. The Focus on Florida's Future budget provides $294.6 million in additional support for mental health and substance use disorder services, including $8.3 million to support a new collaborative care Medicaid rate for treatment of individuals experiencing mental health illness, and $13.2 million to transition the operations of the Northeast Florida State Hospital, or NEFISH, to an outside vendor. Governor DeSantis recommends an additional $40 million for a total of $60 million to the Florida Cancer Innovation Fund to award research grants to support innovative cancer research. The Focus on Florida's Future budget includes over $119 million for seniors, which includes $10 million in rental assistance and $10 million to serve approximately 1,500 low-income seniors on the community care for the elderly waitlist. And the Focus on Florida's Future budget includes $127.4 million to support Floridians with unique abilities, which is split 79.6 million of which to allow individuals to be served through the APD waiver program and $47.8 million to continue and expand the managed care pilot that was established in the 2023 session. The Focus on Florida's Future budget continues to make necessary investments in our public safety, including enhancing law enforcement and correctional officer safety and combating the flow of fentanyl into Florida from the southern border. These priorities include over $14 million to provide special risk retirement benefits to DOC employees that currently spend more than 75% of their time in direct contact with inmates behind the fence. $12 million is provided for critical security equipment, such as drone detection equipment, body scanners, thermal cameras, and riot control equipment. 15% in FCO funding is provided, including $5 million recurring, to improve the infrastructure at our juvenile justice facilities across the state. $96.8 million in FCO funding is provided for DOC, and over $22 million to expand and enhance our crime databases. $5.1 million in 20 FTE is provided for workload support and additional due process resources at our state court system. And $24 million, including $12 million in the base funding, will fully implement the programming and operational needs for our Florida Scholars Academy at DJJ, established in the current year budget. $20 million is provided to continue to support our local law enforcement partners by providing law enforcement recruitment bonuses. In 2023, the Florida State Guard was activated for the first time in 75 years during Hurricane Idalia, augmenting manpower and providing important resources to impacted Floridians. The governor recommends $57 million for the Florida State Guard to continue to support the training and equipment of up to 1,500 volunteer members. These funds will provide for 21 positions to staff the State Guard leadership, $5.2 million in 18 positions for resources necessary to operate and maintain aviation assets that were funded in the current year, $32 million for volunteer onboarding, training, and equipment, $2 million for maritime equipment and operations, and $15.4 million for operations and storage facilities for critical assets, including a new facility at Camp Blanding to support the State Guard. The focus on Florida's future budget places a significant focus on growing our National Guard and providing them with the necessary resources to enhance readiness. Despite the frequency of natural disasters affecting our state, Florida continues to have the lowest per capita force limit in the National Guard Bureau. This can only be improved through the achievement of the Florida National Guard assets to support a larger force limit. The focus on Florida's future budget includes $159 million for the second year of a four-year capital initiative at Camp Blanding to build new training and housing facilities. Governor DeSantis further includes an additional $107 million for a new mission training complex and live fire ranges at Camp Blanding to support the simultaneous training of up to 5,000 National Guardsmen. The focus on Florida's future budget also recognizes the need to continue to grow and expand the National Guard footprint across the state, with $62 million for new readiness centers, new support facilities, and land acquisition for National Guard training resources. Governor DeSantis also proposes $5 million to continue the Revitalization and Modernization Program, or REVAMP program, providing the second year of funding for the renovation and remodeling effort of all 63 of our current readiness centers in the state. And the focus on Florida's future budget also provides $10 million to support traditional maintenance and repairs at readiness centers throughout the state. Governor DeSantis is also proposing to continue the Joint Enlistment Enhancement Program, or JEEP, to recruit and retain Guardsmen. That provides $3 million for a one-time $1,000 bonus to Guardsmen who renew their contract and a $1,000 bonus to current or former Guardsmen who recruit new members into the Florida National Guard. The focus on Florida's future budget provides nearly $400 million in affordable and workforce housing, including fully funding the Sadowski Affordable Housing Trust Funds. Governor DeSantis has recommended full funding for the state's affordable housing programs every year since day one in office. This funding includes $89.5 million for the State Apartment Incentive Loan or SALE program, $208.6 million for the State Housing Initiatives Partnership Program or SHIP, and $100 million for the third year of the Hometown Heroes program that provides closing costs and down payment assistance for eligible homebuyers. The focus on Florida's future budget also includes $1.3 billion in state and federal funding to recover from prior disasters, including Hurricanes Ian, Nicole, and Idalia, as well as mitigation against future disasters. $396 million is provided in the Community Development Block Grant funds for local hurricane recovery and hardening efforts throughout the state. And $5 million is provided for the Unauthorized Alien Transport Program to facilitate the transport of unauthorized aliens. The focus of Florida's future budget includes an historic $14.5 billion for the State Transportation Work Program. And in addition, Governor DeSantis continues the Moving Florida Forward initiative with a $630 million general revenue investment to fully fund all 20 infrastructure projects contained in the plan. Governor DeSantis continues to prioritize the economic development of Florida with the following important programs and the focus on Florida's future budget. $100 million for the Florida Job Growth Grant Fund, supporting economic growth by providing local areas with funding for public infrastructure and workforce training projects. $105 million to continue the state marketing and promotion efforts of Visit Florida. $175.2 million for the third phase of the State Small Business Credit Initiative, providing small businesses with access to additional capital. $100 million for the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment, or BEAD, program to expand high-speed internet deployment in rural communities. $20 million for the third year of bonus payments for law enforcement officers who are new to the profession in the state, including those relocating from other states. And $80 million for the University of Florida Semiconductor Institute to support workforce development for semiconductor manufacturing alongside research and development focused on advanced packaging and artificial intelligence. This funding is split $35 million for operating costs and $45 million for fixed capital outlay. Thank you for the opportunity to present the focus on Florida's future budget on behalf of Governor Ron DeSantis. I look forward to working with you as you craft the fiscal year 2024-2025 budget, and I will take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Spencer, and I would like to thank you and all of your staff for putting together the presentation and getting this proposal to us. I know a lot of work goes into it, and I want to recognize all of you for your efforts. Now, members, do we have any questions of Mr. Spencer? Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Spencer. Thank you for that comprehensive presentation. I have questions in a number of silos, Mr. Chair, so maybe I'll just kind of be recognized for a series, or how would you like to do that?
I want to be able to spread the questions around in case other members have questions as well. Why don't you go for a little bit? I'll tell you when we need to stop and recognize.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. That sounds good. So could we talk about the Sadowski Affordable Housing Trust Fund, and is the budget treating that trust fund as a floor or a ceiling in terms of our state's investment in tackling this issue?
Mr. Chairman.
You're recognized.
The way the governor's treating that in this budget is actually not necessarily a floor or a ceiling. We are fully funding the projected revenues that are in that trust fund. In addition to that, we have $100 million in general revenue that goes towards Hometown Heroes. So it's a component of the overall strategy in affordable housing. Again, the governor has recommended fully funding the Sadowski Trust Funds every single year. That is, you know, one of the resources available for affordable housing, but not all of the resources that are available for affordable housing.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Spencer. That's good to hear. I think I did notice, though, that there might be $400 million less dedicated to affordable housing that would then was dedicated to the Live Local Act last year. Could you talk about that and whether or not there's going to be an aim to try to get those funding levels to where they were for the last session?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, we picked up every issue from the Live Local Act that was recurring in nature. The non-recurring issues were non-recurring, and so those were not picked up. What the governor traditionally does is fully fund whatever revenues are available when it comes to affordable housing. Happy to work with the legislature if there's any additional resources that you're interested in dedicating towards affordable or workforce housing. But we did pick up any of the recurring issues that were a component of the Live Local Act.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I noticed the $10 million in funding for HBCU hardening, and maybe this is more of a statement than a comment, but I just really appreciate the continued conversation there to get our HBCUs to where they need to be, because it's essential. We know they've been working with Department of Homeland Security and just, you know, trying to get what they need there. So that's more of a compliment. Could I ask another question, though, about the litigation defense? How much money is in the budget for litigation defense on behalf of the state where we're dealing with constitutionality challenges to some of these laws that have passed? I think I've noticed a trend over the years where this budget is increasing. So could you tell me how much is in the budget for the 2023 session?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a breakout of specific litigation defense for any kind of constitutionality challenges. We can get a breakout for you. We take your office of all outside counsel litigation money in the budget. Some of it's appropriated specifically for litigation support and outside counsel. Some of it's just contained within a contracted services category for an agency. So we'll make a breakout for you guys and get it over.
Any further questions?
I do, but I'll wait.
Next up, Representative Hunchowski. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have two or three questions. So you want me to?
You're recognized. If you don't mind running them through the chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. Thank you so much for that great presentation. I had a question on the behavioral health side of things. Is that an overall increase, or is there a decrease in that area? And if so, in what areas is there a decrease?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Components of this are an overall increase. I would focus in on some of the new stuff that we're trying to do here in behavioral health. Number one is that collaborative care, that $8.3 million issue that's in there. That's establishing a whole new Medicaid rate structure for collaborative care between mental health providers, primary care physicians, to be able to try to encourage more of this collaboration between treatment for individuals. There are increases also throughout the overall mental health side of the budget. Some of that's in Medicaid. Some of that's based on estimates of what a caseload is in Medicaid. Some of that is specific programs. We can go ahead and get you a list, a breakout of everything that's an increase above the base on everything that's in behavioral health, mental health silo.
Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in the behavioral health space, I know there's an increase for mobile crisis intervention services. However, there was a planning grant from the federal government that we didn't take advantage of. And then also recently, we didn't take advantage of an energy efficiency money from the federal government. Can you explain what the reasoning is that we're using general revenue for that but not taking advantage of those federal funds?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Spencer, you're recognized.
I'm not familiar with the first planning grant. I'll have to go back with our staff and take a look at that and get back to you on that one. I can speak on the energy grant. In the governor's recommended budget for this year, we are recommending pursuing the energy grant that I believe you're referring to, the energy grant from the Department of Commerce. There is a piece of that. So overall, that program contained a lot of policy that is inconsistent with the policy directives of the policy perspective of the governor. But there is a piece of that that deals directly with home energy rebates. So in the back of the bill, in the governor's recommendations, there's funding provided for the Department of Commerce to be able to provide the administrative support for that program. And then in the implementing bill, there's language that would allow for, once received from the federal government, those dollars to then be distributed as part of that program. So we are recommending bringing that piece of that overall federal program to the state of Florida.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the sales tax holidays, some of our local governments have surtaxes. How are they impacted by these sales tax holidays?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, it's a foregone collection for those local governments. I will say, though, that all of our local governments are experiencing the same increase in revenues that the state of Florida is receiving. Property values have gone significantly higher. The assessed roll for property valuation is higher than it's ever been in the state of Florida. So there is a lot of revenue coming in to our locals. I have not heard personally, and I'd welcome anybody to direct my way, any local governments that are not pleased with some of these sales tax holidays. I've not heard any.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is my last one. I saw the lowering of eliminating spots that were open for a longer period of time regarding FTEs. Are any of those in the customer service areas, in the areas for DCF? And the reason I ask that is I had several constituents who had issues with their med waivers, and they found it impossible to get customer service. And they were with children who were disabled, so it wasn't a financial thing. It was something that they should never have been removed from. And my concern is that I don't want the resident-facing FTEs to go down. So I don't know if you can explain if that's where the
FTEs are coming from.
Mr. Chairman, the FTE reductions across the agency are kind of spread across a whole lot of things. But and so there probably are some that deal directly with consumers. There's also some that are back office type positions. The key with the FTE reductions is that almost all of them, if not all of them, have been vacant now for over a year. Some of them have been vacant for 2 years, 3 years. Some have been vacant for 5 years or longer. In DCF in particular, we are very sympathetic to the challenges that some individuals are experiencing right now trying to get through, particularly the Medicaid redetermination process. In this budget, the governor is recommending additional resources to surge support into those areas. So the call centers, the redetermination process, all of those important services that are dealing directly with Floridians to try to expedite this process, we are recommending increases in investment for personnel in those areas.
Representative Masullo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Spencer, for your presentation, and we certainly appreciate you prioritizing our reserves and reducing debt. Can you comment on how those reserves are invested and if they indeed return anything on the investment and if that return is reflected in your revenue projection?
Mr. Chairman. So most of our reserves are, especially if it's in the general revenue fund, those funds are invested by DFS, by the CFO's office, in varying terms of maturity, whether it's three-month notes, six-month notes, various different types of short-term maturity issues, so that you can maintain that liquidity. The only true reserve that we've had in the past that was actually an invested fund in equities or other types of investments was the old Lawton Childs Endowment Fund that was eliminated several years ago. So these reserves are maintained cash balance, invested on short-term durations to generate revenues. Those interest earnings are factored into the revenue estimates that EDR produces in consultation with the legislature and the governor's office. And so any amount of that anticipated increase or yield that would come off of that retained balance is factored already into our revenue estimates, which then factors into what that unallocated general revenue balance is that we use for reserves.
Thank you.
Representative Williams, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation. You spoke about education being one of the top priorities for our governor, but according to our budget that we have from 2017, we had approximately $20 billion for education. Now we had approximately 22. So why are we not receiving that higher increase on our budget for education?
Mr. Chairman. Recognized. So the governor's recommending $27.8 billion for education in K-12. To your point, in 2017, it was $20 billion. So we have gone up by more than $7 billion. We look at, you know, a couple of things that we care a lot about when we're trying to make sure that there's enough resources going into public K-12. There's certain guiding factors. Number one, you want to make sure that the per pupil education amount is going up. And it has consistently gone up. Back in 2017, it was $7,307 per student. In this budget recommendation, it would be $8,842 per student. So you're talking about $1,500 per student more than in 2017. We also want to make sure that we're always increasing the BSA. The base student allocation provides a lot of flexible funding for our school districts so they can use those funds for various purposes. Now, of that increase in BSA, now that we've collapsed the categorical for teacher pay into those categoricals, some of that money is dedicated for teacher pay. In the governor's budget, we earmarked that out and specifically state that. But regardless, when you're looking at overall level of funding, $27.8 billion versus $20.6, that's an increase, pretty substantial. And then the amount of per student funding from $7,300 up to $8,800, I think it's fair to say that we have significantly invested an increase in education for K-12.
Representative Williams, recognized.
Thank you very much. You spoke about the law enforcement officers that you are having additional funding for new officers that coming in. What about the senior officers that has already been in place?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, so this budget does not include any across-the-board pay raises as we have done in prior years. There was a pay for state employees, including for law enforcement officers last year. There have been several rounds of pretty significant pay packages over the last couple of years. What we're trying to do now is take a pause on any across-the-board pay increases and see what other issues need to be done, whether it's benefits, whether it's conditions of workforce, which is why we're investing a significant amount of money in FCO for corrections, for example, whether it's buying more equipment, which we're trying to plus up both for FDLE, Department of Corrections, and DJJ, see what other types of things are needed in order to encourage more recruitment and retention. We're seeing a lot of productive signs out of that. We're seeing, particularly in Department of Corrections, officers are coming back in, and we're seeing a growth in our recruitment. So the pay raise has worked. Now we're trying to make the environment safer there. I will say on the pay issue, while there's not an across-the-board pay package in this budget, there is a second round of the agency discretionary pay that was done similar to the way that it was done in the current year budget that is contemplated for October of next year after there's a period of time to evaluate what agency needs are. So our law enforcement agencies, FDLE, the FHP component of highway safety, FWC, they will have an opportunity under this recommended budget to advance a proposal to provide pay in whatever way that they feel is necessary to reward their current law enforcement officers and recruit more law enforcement officers, subject to the approval of the legislature through the LBC.
Representative Williams, recognized.
Thank you very much. As you spoke about DCF, you spoke about certain increases in the department, but you also did not include anything for the foster kids that's aging out of the system or employees that's currently in positions that's available.
Mr. Spencer, you're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, we can get you some more detail on some of the changes that we're recommending when it comes to foster care. We are changing some of the ages. There's a conforming bill that is associated with the governor's recommended budget. We can meet with your office and walk you through some of those issues. But in general, we are in this budget recommending increased resources both for adoption and for foster, both for the adoption subsidies and to expand benefits for foster care for the kids that are in the foster care system. So we'd be happy to come by and talk to you about that.
Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Spencer, for the presentation. I wanted to ask about reserves as well, and get an understanding of what the governor's definition, I guess, of reserves are, because it seems like some things wouldn't necessarily be reserves, like FORA and RAP. Isn't that still going to be drawn down at some point by the insurance companies?
Mr. Chairman.
You're recognized.
The numbers that we're including in here related to FORA and RAP are the unobligated cash portions of those. The way the FORA and RAP program is set up is that they expire, I believe, at the end of the year, they expire, and it's going to revert back to GR. So right now, it's still in the FORA and RAP program. Those dollars live in GR right now. There's a process that's set up in the enabling statute that created those two programs that actually requires action both from the CAT fund and then also from the SBA and also from the governor's office to actually initiate a transfer only if there's a need. So there's not an automatic ability right now for an insurance company to draw those cash down only in the event of a major disaster that's not already happened would those dollars be needed. And we always look at reserves as what's the contingency for any potential unforeseen circumstance. So those dollars are there for if there's a Category 5 hurricane that hits next year and we need to have our reserves available to support that, that's what those dollars are for. Those dollars will become unallocated GR at the expiration of the program unless that kind of an unforeseen circumstance happens.
Representative Skidmore, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Same question, but in terms of the trust funds, and if it's unexpended funds out of the trust fund, why not reduce the amount going in, or why does it go directly to reserve?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, so we always count on the unobligated, you know, cash balance of trust funds towards reserves because in the event that we need them, they can always be swept into GR if there's an issue. They can always be appropriated against in the event that there's an emergency. We actually only recommend, or at least include in our reserves, $1.8 billion of that unallocated trust fund balance because we, every year when we recommend the governor's budget, we assume full appropriation expenditure against what we're recommending from that trust fund. That doesn't always happen. So there's always reverted amounts from those appropriations that are retained in the trust fund. It's more consistent, as you see in the last few years, higher, closer to $3 billion is how much in the aggregate is left over in these trust funds. We want to make sure those trust funds have healthy balances because they support the appropriations against which the operations of those agencies are funded. So we generally understate what will ultimately end up being the retained ending balance in those trust funds at the end of the fiscal year.
Representative Skidmore, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed that there's an increase in the funding for Florida Pregnancy Support Service Network, or the anti-abortion centers. And I'm curious about the reason for the increase to $29.5 million.
Mr. Spencer, you're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, the governor feels strongly about providing services in support of families and support of pregnant women. This is consistent with his policy position on that matter, and he felt it was very important to increase the funding for those initiatives.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in that regard, since we're now looking at, or the governor is proposing that we look at nearly $30 million for this network, would the governor, because you've mentioned multiple times fiscal responsibility, would the governor then be supportive of some guardrails around that money, like audits of how it's spent or information that is medically accurate that's being delivered, something so that taxpayers know that the $30 million that they're giving to this network is doing what it's supposed to?
That sounds like a lot of a policy question, but you can answer it as it relates to this budget.
Mr. Chairman, it is a policy question. As policy and budget director, I'm happy to answer. So we'd be happy to discuss any recommendations that you would have on that matter. I will say that every appropriation that's contained in the budget, any expenditure of funds, is audited, both by DFS, and there's also verification and validation that takes place at the agencies to support any invoice for expenditures to go out. If you believe there's deficiencies there or any room for improvement, we're happy to discuss that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McClure for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had an ongoing conversation about the Hillsborough County All for Transportation Funds. Can you just kind of walk us through your vision, the governor's vision for that pot of money in this year's budget?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. As it relates to the more than $500 million now that's retained over at Department of Revenue on the sales surtax collections for Hillsborough County, the governor's priority is to figure out a way, the best way, to deliver those dollars back to Hillsborough County, back to the residents of Hillsborough County. We're very eager to work with the legislature on figuring out what that best solution is. What's in this budget is a recommendation to go and put those dollars towards infrastructure projects, being coordinated through DOT and then contracting with Hillsborough County to actually effectuate the construction work. There may be better ways to deliver those dollars to the taxpayers of Hillsborough County. Our priority is to make sure that whatever that answer is on delivering those dollars, that we get it done this year. And so we're happy to work with you and the rest of the legislature to get that done.
Representative Daly for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Spencer, for the presentation. I guess I wanted to kind of circle back to the Florida State Guard and contrast that with the Florida National Guard. So it's my understanding, as somebody that's worked pretty closely with the National Guard and others on issues related to the National Guard, that the Florida State Guard, when it was originally proposed, was meant to be more of a ancillary force, auxiliary, if you will, doing things that we didn't need a National Guardsman or woman to do. So directing traffic, helping coordinate water drops, things like that. So I guess I would ask, you know, in terms of funding, it seems the last 2 years now, the governor's policy priority on this issue and budget funding to match have kind of morphed, making the Florida State Guard appear more like a mini military than an ancillary body. So I guess what I would ask is, you know, we're looking at $32 million for member onboarding, training, and equipment. It's a heck of a lot of training on directing traffic when you've got things like the Readiness Center maintenance and repairs allocated for only $10 million for the Florida National Guard. Meanwhile, our readiness centers are crippled across the state. So how does that interplay work?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, so from day one, back when we recommended the State Guard 3 years ago, at this podium, we said that it was designed to be a force multiplier for the National Guard. Yes, members of the State Guard will do things like coordinate the distribution of materials and supplies during disaster recovery and response, but they'll also be doing any other type of function within their training to be able to relieve some of the pressure on the National Guard and any of our state agencies. Again, our National Guard has the lowest force limit in the country, and that's outside of our control, partially. That's we get our force limit set by the Pentagon, by Washington, and that's why we're recommending such a significant investment in trying to build all of the infrastructure to support a larger force limit at the state level to justify getting more National Guardsmen. But we don't want to be subject always to the changing policies of allocation of force limit from Washington, D.C., when we are a very hurricane-prone state. We have significant needs from our National Guard. And frankly, our National Guard, our Guardsmen are deployed now more every single year than anywhere else in the country, and that's a significant strain on those individuals that are Guardsmen and their families. The State Guard is able to step in with the appropriate training, which is why we're recommending this amount of resources to make sure they have the appropriate training. They can step in and they can relieve a lot of that. And the goal, as we get more of these members of the State Guard onboarded, is to reduce those number of days per year that our National Guardsmen have to be called up, and really make it sustainable to be a National Guard soldier in Florida. We're very, very, very excited about the success that we've seen so far with the State Guard. We did activate them for Hurricane Idalia. Luckily, there was not as widespread of catastrophic damage or significant long-term need from Idalia as there was with Hurricane Ian. But having those resources available was tremendously helpful, both from the National Guard perspective, but also from the state as a whole.
Representative Daly, you recognized?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Spencer, for that answer. I guess one additional question here. So unless something has changed, or maybe I'm misunderstanding, my understanding of the setup right now, the structure, is that the Florida State Guard does not report to the National Guard, but is administered in some way, shape, or form by the National Guard, but has a separate director that reports directly to the governor. If that's correct, is there a change coming? Because I'm seeing $2.5 million directed toward full-time program administration. Are they going to be splitting off from the National Guard altogether?
Mr. Chairman.
You're recognized.
You're right in the way it's structured. It's administratively housed in the Department of Military Affairs. The director of the State Guard reports to the governor directly, similar in structure as to the way that the Florida Digital Service is structured within DMS, where it's administratively housed in DMS, and the state CIO reports to the governor. So the funds here for those positions, the biggest thing we're trying to do is trying to make sure that we're providing enough resources, enough personnel to support the State Guard without having to raid from all of the other positions that are currently at DMA to provide that administrative support function. We don't want to overwork the guys that we already have at DMA to support a growing State Guard. So we want to make sure that they have the type of resources, the amount of people they need to do the accounting, the back office, the personnel, HR. In addition to that, also, some of those positions are, you know, the 18 for the aviation staff. Make sure that as we're purchasing these helicopters for disaster response, that we're actually taking care of them and that we can actually fly them. So that is important as well.
Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we talk a little bit about the justice silo, Mr. Spencer? Specifically, I noticed that there is a $25 million non-recurring funding from the General Revenue Fund to the Department of Law Enforcement for the creation of a state assistance for fentanyl eradication in Florida program. Could you talk about that program and that funding, please?
Mr. Chairman. That program is designed to be a collaboration between law enforcement partners, both local and state, in conducting operations around the state to try to take fentanyl off of our roads. That involves things like interdictions, which we've been doing now for the last month or for the last year, to some great success. We'll be having some announcements on some numbers around a lot of those operations. But really stepping up the presence of attempting to go out and interdict the flow of this contraband, of these drugs, into the state of Florida. So it's amplifying law enforcement activity through partnerships between FDLE, our sheriffs, our police departments, our state law enforcement and different agencies, and really trying to increase that presence to get fentanyl off the streets.
You're recognized.
Thank you. And is there anything in the governor's budget that recommends funding for additional judicial or additional judges throughout the state?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Love that question. It comes up every single year, and my answer is usually the same, unfortunately. At the time that we developed the budget, we had not received the certification from the state court system yet. So there is no recommendation for any additional judges in this budget.
You're recognized.
Thank you. What about funding for the construction of a building for the 6th District Court of Appeal?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, there is no recommendation for funding for the 6th District DCA in this budget. So far, they've been able to use different facilities around the circuit, around the district, to be able to conduct their proceedings, and it seems to be going pretty well. You know, we are open to discussing what a long-term solution to that looks like, but so far, it's been really interesting to see how they've been able to move around the district and be very accessible, both to law students to go in there and take a look at what's going on, but also to people that are appearing before their proceedings.
Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you. It sounds like the judges are looking for a building. Like they would really like to have a building.
Or a question.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so would we agree that by creating an entirely new District Court of Appeal to handle the appellate level cases that they probably need a building and a real courthouse as opposed to auditoriums?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, we're happy to discuss what their needs may be long term. In this budget, we do not recommend the construction of a new facility. There is a lot of FCO commitments to various state needs in this budget, and we have to prioritize as we look, you know, 1, 2, 5, 10 years out, how to stagger those investments. So we're happy to have that discussion on what that long term need for the 6th DCA might be.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Driscoll for a question.
Thank you. If we could talk a little bit about the ag sector now too. I noticed that there was a drop in 17 positions in fruit and vegetable inspections. Could you talk about why that might be? I know that, you know, we generate a lot of produce, but we import a lot too, so it would seem those positions are important.
I believe you said that the only positions dropped in the budget were vacant positions, so but could you answer the representative's questions,
please? Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The only positions that we're taking in reductions are chronically vacant positions. So positions that have been vacant in excess of a year, with a very rare exception, vacant for more than a year. Those positions, now we are actually increasing resources in DACS for, you know, the vehicle weigh stations, the agricultural inspection stations, those kinds of areas. What we're trying to do with the FTE exercise, as we call it, the realignment, is to realign those resources to be in line with reality at these agencies. Let them keep portions or all, depending on the agency, of that salary, benefits, and rate associated with those vacant positions, but get rid of the vacant positions that there's never been an intention potentially to ever fill because they've been chronically vacant for so long, and those resources associated with those positions are being dedicated elsewhere to support other positions.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But is it that we don't need those positions or that it's been hard to fill them?
Mr. Chairman. The way that we looked at this is, if it's been vacant for over a year, it's not that it's been hard to fill them, because we separately measure what's the turnover in positions. So if someone gets hired and they leave after 3 months or after 6 months, that's not going to be counted as a position that's been chronically vacant, because that position was filled at one point and then there was a severance. So we don't look at those positions with high turnover. We look at positions that have just never been filled. And that was our exercise.
You're recognized.
Thank you. I also noticed a drop in marketing for products marketing for our agricultural products, maybe like a 31% drop. But we know that the ag industry is so essential to Florida's economy. Could you explain why we're reducing the advertising budget?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, so traditionally when we do the governor's budget recommendations, we look at, you know, the base funding, we look at adjusting that base funding. We don't pick up a lot of one-time non-recurring issues that are included in there. In the current year budget, there was a non-recurring increase in promotions. Happy to discuss with the legislature what that, you know, if there's a need for another one-time increase, what that would look like. But we maintain the amount of agricultural promotions and advertising across various silos within the agricultural space.
Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you. I also noticed a drop in citrus research funding, both for the Department of Agriculture and in the Department of Citrus. Is there a reason for this?
Mr. Chairman, same answer. $20 million is provided in the governor's budget for citrus in general. That includes agricultural promotion, that includes marketing. There's often non-recurring issues that are added each year to try to plus that up. Traditionally, we don't pick up non-recurring issues like that. If they come back year over year, they get evaluated by the governor for approval when we get to the veto process.
Okay. Representative Driscoll, you're recognized for one more question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope that's just for right now. I know we got some more time on the clock, and I do have more questions.
We got other people waiting to ask questions, too.
Okay, then. I'm always happy to wait and take another turn. Why is there such a huge decrease in resilience grants from last year? It looks like there's a $200 million decrease.
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, in the current year General Appropriations Act, the resilient money was actually split between different fund sources. So there was the traditional trust fund that was established at the governor's recommendation several years ago to establish the Resilient Florida program. And then periodically, general revenue has been infused in there. Also, state fiscal recovery funds have been infused in there. This fully funds the revenue estimates for the Resilient Florida Trust Fund.
Representative Driscoll, do you have a follow-up on that line of questions? Representative Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. As you spoke about the budget.
Representative Williams, can you pull that microphone a little bit closer to your mouth, please?
As you spoke about the budget that has been put together, I haven't heard anything that you have in the budget to help the crisis that we have for insurance. We have Floridians that's crying out. So is it anything this budget that will assist them?
Representative Williams, I do believe he went through the various tax breaks on property insurance, but Mr. Spencer, if you'd like to follow up on that.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Yes, in the governor's tax package, he is recommending over $400 million in tax reductions that relate to property insurance policies. That's not going to fully offset increases in premiums for the last 2 years or the last 3 years, because there's a number of factors that go into that. But it is $400 million of relief, including permanent relief, permanent exemption from the insurance premium tax for flood insurance policies, because we feel it's important to make sure that we're reducing as much as we can any burden on Floridians acquiring flood insurance. It's a matter of public policy that as many Floridians as possible should be covered for the peril of flood.
Representative Williams, you recognize?
As you stated that, I have still not heard anything that will assist the Floridian. but I'm going to move on. As you spoke about different things that you have broke out, there's nothing mentioned about cultural museum facilities or anything like that. From the money that was in the budget that was allocated last year, can you tell me where would that money be used for now?
Mr. Spencer.
Mr. Chairman, in making difficult decisions on crafting this budget and trying to set us on a course of going down in the amount of appropriations and returning to a stable environment, the governor did make the decision that this year we are not going to recommend funding for the cultural and historic grant program over at the Department of State.
Representative Williams,
right? Thank you. So the money that was used last year, that was already a line item there, can you tell me where that money would be redirected to?
Mr. Spencer, you're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, that money is not being directed anywhere other than where it was appropriated for the current year. There's a list of projects. That money gets released to those projects as it was appropriated in the GAA. The governor's not recommending funding for next year for that program.
Representative Duggan for a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Spencer, for this presentation. I want to ask you about line 1301, aid to local governments for crime prevention initiatives from general funds, $3 million. In the wake of the Dollar General shooting in Jacksonville, the tragedy earlier this year, the governor came to Jacksonville, committed $1 million to help harden Edward Waters University, which apparently could have been the initial target of that tragedy. And on behalf of the city of Jacksonville, let me say thank you for the governor's commitment to that. Is it possible that this fund of money that the governor has put in as a line item, as you know, I had reached out to you about other resources that could be directed to these communities around in that neighborhood in Northwest Jacksonville, community development, workforce training, crime prevention. Could this some of this money be eligible for that for those initiatives and perhaps plussed up?
Mr. Chairman.
Recognized.
That's right, Representative. The $3 million that's contained in that line item is appropriated right now in the governor's recommendation as crime prevention strategies for the Jacksonville area. Exactly to your point, it's related to that unfortunate incident. The governor it feels very strongly about standing with the community there, working with the legislature to figure out how much needs to go into what type of programs in order to show that commitment. I'm happy to work with the legislature on figuring out what that final number looks like. $3 million was a starting conversation on that issue. We'd welcome any recommendations or consideration as we go into the crafting of the budget. A similar issue was also included in the budget, about the same number, about $3 million, related to the shooting that took place in Ybor City. So we are very eager to work with the legislature to figure out what types of programs need to happen around these incidents of violence so that we can provide the services needed to ensure they don't happen again.
Thank you very much.
Representative Andrade for a question.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Spencer, in looking at the budget this year, it appears that a significant amount of money is being recommended as being part of the back of the bill, you know, fund transfers and carry forwards. In your experience in crafting the budget, is the amount in back of the bill transfers this year, does it comport with prior years, or is it higher than normal?
Mr. Spencer.
Mr. Chairman, I can proudly say that the amount of back of bill issues between transfers and appropriations is lower than what's in the current General Appropriations Act by several billion dollars, and lower than traditionally has been recommended by the governor in previous budgets. And I will say, you know, one thing that may have, I don't know if anyone noticed it, and then probably I shouldn't even call it out, but when you talk about the amount of general revenue that's appropriated, right, the governor recommends $46 billion to be appropriated for 24-25. The amount of GR that's actually coded for 24-25 is 46.2. That means that $200 million of general revenue is included in the back of the bill as 24-25 appropriations, various reasons for that. You know, plugging a deficit in the current year that has to be recurring, for example. There was $675 million of recurring general revenue appropriations back of bill in the current GAA. So we're about $400 million less on that metric as well.
Any further questions? Representative Skidmore for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Spencer, I wanted to ask you about the Open Door Grant Program. It The budget provides $35 million for the workforce development in communities since fiscal year 21-22. It's gotten $35 million. But the Department of Education, in their presentation for 23-24, said only $863,195 was expended. Do you have any insight as to why that program's underutilized?
Mr. Chairman, I would unfortunately have to call on the Department of Education to answer that question. I don't know if they are here somewhere. We can always come and meet with you after. There we are. Oh, maybe Commissioner, if the chair pleases.
Yep, for a question. Commissioner, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you want to clarify the question to make sure we get the specific answer correct?
Representative Skidmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm referencing the Open Door Grant Program that has been appropriated at a level of $35 million, but less than $1 million looks like has been expended. And I'm just curious if you have insight as to why that it's for workforce development in communities, why that is under utilized, and if there's a better utilization for those funds.
So that, I
yeah,
think
sorry,
that's.
Sorry, that was two.
Yeah, I got you. So that's a fair question. I think what you're asking, though, is why the money wasn't fully deployed in last year's budget,
right?
And then whether we should have the same amount in this budget. Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the law was tweaked this year. We expect that change to help getting, sometimes when these programs are created in the legislature, it takes a little bit of time and tweaking to make sure we hit that sweet spot, to make sure it has the effectiveness that it was designed to have, or the intent of the legislature.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we just need to be a little patient and see where it goes. Is that kind of where the department is?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the change happening this past legislative session and this being an early session, obviously the legislature is here earlier, and so we are taking those changes that just happened into effect into this fiscal year.
So I'm going to invite you to get with the commissioner and get answers to your questions, because I know you want to have more understanding of what the change was.
But, thank you, Mr. Chair. We'd be happy to do that.
We'll need an appearance form, please.
And then one more question for Mr. Chair.
Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the tax breaks, the freedom sales tax, has that always been 3 months?
Mr. Spencer, you're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I believe so. I believe it's actually, this is longer. We can get you the exact details of how it has been in the past years, but I'm not sure if exactly it has been 3 months, but we are recommending 3 months. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, are there any other questions? Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to talk about the new E-Verify components, because last year when we discussed Senate Bill 1718, there weren't any robust conversations about how much this would cost, and now we see in the bill for the Department of Commerce alone, it's $1.87 million. So could we talk about what exactly that money is going to pay for?
Mr. Spencer, you're recognized.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, so that money goes and supports the staff and all of the review, the audits, the enforcement actions that have to be taken by Department of Commerce to ensure that employers in the state are in compliance with the requirements of the law for E-Verify. So it's no different than funding that's provided any other agency for regulatory actions and regulatory enforcement, both for the staff and for associated expenses, et cetera, that would go into any kind of office in the function of their enforcement actions.
Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there costs for this program in any other silos? Like, is it spread out beyond the Department of Commerce, or is $1.87 million the total cost for the program?
Mr. Spencer.
Mr. Chairman, what comes to mind readily is the commerce portion of it. I know that there are other areas of government that have the authority to investigate and enforce actions on the E-Verify law. I'd have to get back with you. We don't have any specific line item for E-Verify enforcement, similar to how this money is in Department of Commerce elsewhere, but there are other agencies, other aspects of government, whether it's the Attorney General's office or locals, that have the ability to look into compliance with E-Verify. We can do our best to see if we can break that out, but we're happy to come by and discuss that with you as well.
Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's talk a little bit, too, about this unauthorized alien transport program. I see that there's been $5 million allocated. How much money remains, though, from the previously allocated funds?
Mr. Chairman.
Spencer, you're recognized.
There's about $10 million of the $12 million that was appropriated in the current year towards that program. I'm not at liberty to talk about any flights that may or may not be happening or operations that may or not be happening between now and the end of the fiscal year, but we do expect there to be more activity in the program before the end of the fiscal year. So we are recommending $5 million, but we are also recommending a revert and reappropriate of whatever may be left over of that remaining 10.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. So we allocated 12, there's 10 left, but we want another 5. Why isn't the 10 that's left over sufficient? Because it seems like we didn't use very much of the 12.
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, we do anticipate expending more from that $10 million current balance of that appropriation. We'd like to have an additional $5 million in there so that whatever is left over at the end of this fiscal year and reverted and reappropriated, should that be included in the General Appropriations Act, can be supported by the additional $5 million. We want to make sure that we have enough resources in there to continue the program going forward. And we do anticipate expending more of that $10 million before the end of the fiscal year.
Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So would any of this appropriation be used for surveillance or monitoring of potential participants? And if so, how much?
Recognized.
Mr. Chairman, the funds are not used for surveillance. The funds are used specifically for the program around transporting unauthorized aliens out of the state of Florida or from other states to other states in the United States as authorized by the statute. There's no surveillance, no law enforcement aspect to this. The program's administered under the Division of Emergency Management, and it facilitates contracts with carriers to move people. There's no surveillance involved in that. There is outreach to identify individuals that are willing to volunteer for the program. And then all of the support services that go around that. So any feeding that might go into that, any additional support services that might be necessary as we're in the process of transporting unauthorized aliens out of the state.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you describe this outreach and what goes into that?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, it depends on, we have two vendors that were awarded contracts through the Division of Emergency Management. Really, it's up to how they go and identify individuals who want to volunteer for this program. I believe one of the vendors is actually advertising that you can go ahead and do this. Other vendors go and they will send people to go and try to talk to people, right? It just depends on the strategy, the timing of that. But there is no law enforcement surveillance. There is no, any kind of law enforcement aspect to it.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think what you're describing is the type of outreach that we saw with this program before. It sounds very similar, but that outreach, if I remember correctly, led to some litigation, which means that there are even greater expenses for this program. Is there any intention perhaps to change that outreach so that we're making sure we're staying within the budget that the governor's proposing?
Mr. Chairman.
To avoid that litigation. Thank you.
I can't speak about any pending litigation on the previous program. I will say that this program, as established by law under the Division of Emergency Management, does have very clear contract relationship with the contractors who have been awarded the contract through the process with DEM in order to avoid as much exposure to risk as possible to the state, as would be the case with any type of vendor agency relationship with any other type of procurement in the state.
Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you. The program allows for the transport of individuals the state calls inspected unauthorized aliens, which really veers into federal government territory. So who in the federal government does the division work with to verify that an individual qualifies as an inspected unauthorized alien?
Mr. Chairman.
Spencer.
There are requirements as part of the relationship, again, between the Division of Emergency Management and with the contractors to produce the necessary paperwork that is provided to individuals when they have been inspected by the federal government and they are an unauthorized alien. So there's actually a lot more than I ever thought there were, a series of documents that satisfy within that. I
could not, from the top of my head, recall all the different government numbers that are attached to each one of those forms, but there are a series of them that are required to be produced in order to verify that you are, in fact, an inspected unauthorized alien.
And remember, members, we are asking questions on the budget, so at least punctuate your policy questions with the word budget for me. Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for all your answers, Mr. Spencer. I was just looking at the Department of Transportation silo, and there's an increase for the Transportation Systems Development Turnpike Enterprise, but Rail Enterprise is eliminated. Can you remind us why we don't need any money in Rail Enterprise?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's dormant. I'd have to go back and get you some follow-up on that specific issue that's within there. We picked up, for the most part, all the recommendations that came from the Department of Transportation and their LBR, but happy to go and discuss that with you.
Any further questions? Representative Payne, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Spencer, for your clarity, as always, on the governor's budget. I want to talk about FTEs just for a minute. You said those that were vacant were eliminated. Is there a case where those positions may have been federally funded but were not fulfilled because the federal dollars haven't been supplied for over a year or two?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to go back and look at all the positions. Some of these positions are federally funded, for sure, or at least a portion. There's a maintenance of effort requirement on the part of the state, and then there's federal dollars that are attached to it. You know, we always run the concern whenever it gets close to a potential government shutdown, which we've experienced multiple times in the last couple of years with Washington, of identifying which positions, what programs are funded by the federal government and which ones are not, and which and what is that cost breakdown. We actually run that exercise in the governor's office every time that we come up against the deadline of a potential government shutdown. And we identify those positions that would be furloughed. There are a number of them in state government. I don't think that on any of these specific reductions that any of them are specifically as a result of not receiving federal funds. We don't receive the federal funds for them if they're not filled. Again, we focus specifically on trying to identify the positions that have been chronically vacant, clearly, you know, not able to be filled. And our viewpoint of that is, it makes more sense to right-size the size of the workforce that we have on paper closer to what the actual workforce is, and then if there's a demonstrated need in a subsequent year, come back and ask for those positions. But first of all, try to get everything aligned so that we're within the operations of what the actual real operations are for these agencies, give them the resources they need to keep the staff they've got, grow the staff as they need it, and then come and make a request for additional positions once they need those.
Right. Thank you.
Representative Driscoll, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's talk a little bit about election security. I noticed that there was more funding allocated to election security. Why do we need this additional funding? Why is this showing up in the budget when it seems like there have been very few issues with our elections?
Mr. Spencer, you recognized?
Mr. Chairman, what you're referring to probably in this budget is we're continuing to fund the Office of Election Crimes and Security over at the Department of State. It's, you know, Florida operates some of the best elections in the country. It's important, though, that there is confidence in voters that should there be any election irregularities or allegations of election fraud or any issues, that there is a dedicated team to go and investigate that. We are proud of the work that the Elections Crimes and Security Office has been doing at the Department of State. We want to make sure it's continuing to be funded and it gets the resources that it needs to be able to investigate any issues around, any potential issues around any elections in the future. The big increases that we've had in elections in this budget, there is great need in both our campaign finance database system over at the Department of State and our voter registration system. So we're embarking on a multi-year process to revamp both of those. You know, every member in here has to use the campaign finance database. It is very old. We have concerns about it for cybersecurity perspective, so we want to make sure that we're trying to overhaul that. And the voter registration system, similar in nature, very old, needs to have a multi-year redo. And so we're recommending to initiate that. So those are the two biggest increases as it relates to elections that's in the Department of State budget.
Representative Driscoll, you recognize? And we are at 9:25 here. We have a hard stop at 9:30. So I'm going to make this the last question because we do have some public comment.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be brief. Could you please explain the reasons for the lack of funding for cultural and museum grants, the Cultural Facilities Program, and acquisition and restoration of historic properties?
Mr. Spencer.
Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned before, the governor made some hard decisions in trying to prioritize the resources that he was going to recommend in this budget in order to make sure that we are aligning this budget in a fiscally responsible way. He decided that in this year, we do not need to prioritize that program for this year. That program has received a significant amount of funding in prior years. It always is way bigger. The governor always recommends about $5 million towards that. So the legislature gives $30 million sometimes each year towards those initiatives. The governor felt that this year, it was not a priority to include in his recommendations.
All right, members, we're going to move into public comment. I have a comment card from Mr. Spencer, which I'm assuming you've been doing for the last hour and a half. And then we also have one from Commissioner Diaz, which I'm assuming applied to your last comments. And now I'll recognize Dave Kerner from Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. All right, he's in favor of the budget. All right, members, with that being said, we will accept a motion to adjourn. Representative Mooney moves we adjourn without objection. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.